everybody, and welcome to this ArcMoss session. So in this series, we talk about service design and journey mapping software, and we're going to answer some user questions live in the chat as well. We're going to talk about that later. And yep, you've got the two hosts here. So here we have Mark.
Hey, everyone. How are you doing? And by the way, who are you? Where's Nicole?
Yeah, so unfortunately, Nicole couldn't make it this week. So I'm the new replacement. And yeah, so I am also a little bit about me. I'm also an employee at More Than Metrics. I've been here for about 6 months. You might be able to notice from the accent that I'm from the UK, but I do live in Innsbruck in Austria. So very lucky to be here. And who else is here?
It's loads of other people who are just joining. So we just bridge some time and win a few minutes until everybody's here. Hi, everyone. I'm Mark, co-founder, CEO of More Than Metrics. Some of you might be familiar with the books that are published together with Jacob. This is Service Design Thinking or This is Service Design Doing. And we are running these webinars basically now for a year, I think. It's almost anniversary time. That's cool.
Time to celebrate soon then.
Yeah, it is. Paul, how does this work? Take us through this, please.
So firstly, a little bit about this session. So this session is going to be predominantly about journey map repositories, which might be a new topic for some of you. Some of you might know a little bit about it before, but it's going to be about the journey map repository is going to help you to be able to build upon other projects and include other journey maps within these projects. And you'll be able to put in research data and have data from personas in there. And we're going to discuss the best practices of a journey map repository and how to use it within teams and clients and some practical insights as well. So how this will work is we've collected some questions beforehand. So we've got a few questions. And we're gonna have time at the end to discuss those. So you can also, if you do have questions that come up during the seminar, you can just enter them into the chat and just make sure that you choose to enter those questions to all panelists and attendees. So that will give everyone a chance, attendees included, to have a look at the questions. So might be that a few attendees have similar questions there. And that's the basic of it. So Mark is going to start with a short introduction, around about 10 minutes, and we're going to be quite strict there. And I'm going to share his screen and go through some slides. And so that's it now, really. Just having a look if we're going to wait a little bit longer for a few more, Mark. What do you think?
Nah, let's kick it off. It's a slow start anyway.
Okay.
With my presentation, I got a kick in the butt from my team last time, by the way, because my intro presentation was too long. That's what they told me in a very nice but very direct, I would say, almost German way. So I really tried to be short this time and focus more on the questions. And I would really encourage you also, besides entering questions in the chat, you can raise your hand and we can make you a panelist. So if you like, you can actually open up your mic and even open up your camera and we can have a conversation. Isn't that amazing? So I would love to have a conversation and talk with you. If you like that, just be invited. I just put it out there. We are recording this session. It will be online available as well. So if you'd like to share it with your colleagues afterwards, you're going to get a link later on. And if you open up your mic or your camera, just be prepared that we record that. Of course, we only show you in the best possible pose, as always.
Of course.
All right. As much as that's possible on Zoom. Yes, exactly.
Well, Mark, how about we just see from where these attendees, lovely attendees, are joining us from. So if we could just test out the chat and maybe if you feel comfortable to say where you're from and what you do.
Netherlands. Okay. There
Netherlands.
We go.
Lovely.
You were just waiting for that, right?
Is that a regular?
It looks like it. Netherlands, Chile. Oh, I love that part. That's always amazing. It's great to see people from all over the world. Dublin, New Zealand. Look at that. What's the time right now in New Zealand? That's amazing. Cool. You can follow the chat. Just make sure that you post it to everyone. There are always loads of people who only post it to us, which is great. But of course, it means that others don't see it. So while you can observe the chat, I will start with my quick intro presentation because we really just have half an hour. Mm-hmm. And I would like to start with a few slides and then show you how a repository can look like before we actually go into the questions that we have. I think 6 or 7 questions that folks sent beforehand, but mainly we want to focus on the question that you have. So to understand the repository and how this works, I always like to compare a journey map to a map in geography. Now, if think about Google Maps, and Google Maps, you can zoom in and out. You can take a look at the whole world or a continent like Europe. You don't see a lot of details, but you get a good overview. You can zoom into a country, zoom into a city. The more you zoom in, the more details you see. So I showed this earlier already, but it's important to understand this when we talk about repositories. There are, in general, 3 different cases of journey maps. I start with the first one on the left-hand side, the workshop maps. These are maps we often co-create together with customers, with users, with frontline staff, with stakeholders, managers, whatever, in a co-creative setting. It can be done online. Probably you use then some kind of whiteboarding software to that, or you do it face-by-face with a journey map on the wall with post-its. These maps are often not made to survive. We do this to learn, to get some research data, but often the conversation people are having in front of the tool are more important than the tool itself. Often we just document it with a photo or a screenshot, and we typically don't come back to them. We just keep it, but what lives on are some pieces of data, some insights we got out of that, but they remain as a research or prototyping tool. The second part is different. These are the project maps. So project maps serve as a boundary object that often you start assumption-based, current state, you then use it to actually fill it up with your data, you enrich it through the research you're doing into research-based maps, and you then define certain areas of interest, certain pain points, opportunities, and out of that you spin different future state journey maps then. All of these means the maps survive during a project, and that might be several days, weeks, months, in big occasions and large projects, maybe even several years. But often after a project, they end up in a drawer and you often don't use them again. And even worse, if you think of a large organization, maybe multinational with loads and loads of different teams doing service design, UX design, design thinking, however you call what we're doing, they often work with different agencies as well. So you might have some of these maps in PDF, some of them are Excel, PowerPoint, Smaply, whatever tool you use. And it's really hard to find old project maps if you don't by chance know someone from this project and work on top of that. So it's hard to find them again. And that's actually one of the key ideas behind a repository, that you build a repository so you're able to find these again. The third kind of map, the management maps, that's actually what the repository is made out of. So you use these maps to connect existing maps. These management maps survive over many projects. They actually connect many projects. We're going to take a look at that, how it looks like in a minute. So back to the hierarchy, the basis of a repository. This is a very simple example. Example of a let's say an airline. The high level experience might be someone traveling. So everything from a travel need to booking, preparing, going to the airport, flying, arriving, and so on and so forth. The customer life cycle, if you like to say. at every step you can zoom in, just like in geography. This is a continent view, and we zoom into the country view. If we zoom into the airport, we now have a different timeline. We're not looking at several weeks. We're looking at maybe 4 hours. And within that, we can then do that for every step, and we can zoom in even further. So if we're at the airport, we look at the boarding experience. That itself could be, again, a journey map. Maybe time duration would be like 20 minutes or so. So you can build that up all the way to micro journeys, micro interactions. Now, these different levels are really important when you build a repository. And it's important to think about that and create a kind of consistency in these levels and these levels of details. Just like maps also have different zoom levels, and they're kind of standardized. And that's why they work so seamlessly and integrate so seamlessly into each other. So a tip: when you build your repository, be clear about how you name these different levels, and maybe time duration is a good indicator for what kind of level you're looking at. All right, that was my intro. Now I just wanted to quickly share how a repository actually can look like. And for that, I just switch over to Smaply. Whoa.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. So that is the same example of a travel journey. And I just zoom out once and show you how it looks in the project base. I always recommend, if you structure it, have one folder for your management maps, the ones you regularly update, they're used to link each other in, and then use the other folders for your different projects that you can then also link into these. So within the folder, you have the high level map and different sub journeys. In this simple example, we just have two levels, a high level and a sub level. So the high level is the level we just looked at, everything from need to travel, at the airport, the flight, and so on. Now, in our example, we just linked a few sub-journeys in here, and I'm going to show you how it looks like. If I zoom into the airport experience now, we see, just like we saw it on the slides, we see a separate journey now, which has a different duration. So now it's the airport journey. Like that, you can really link them into each other. Later on, I'm going to come back, because we have some questions on that also, that you can link it to live data, to KPIs, because you can connect the KPIs also to the different levels of the journeys. You can have KPIs for micro interaction, but also for the big ones. And that's really nice if you want to, if you see an issue, for example, here on the check-ins, then you can actually go to the sub journey and have a closer look there and look at these KPIs. Maybe it shows you already and indicates towards a direction where you should look at. You can also link all the different projects you've done. So the problem I started with, you can actually find the old projects and so on. The last thing I want to show you is, this is really nice also as a dashboard for management. So you can also create an HTML version of your map. And obviously, if you have a shared version of your map, it should also link then to the shared version. So you have the link journey maps lane. If you click on that, another website opens. Again, this is the shared version of the map. And like that, also management or external people, because you don't need to be a Smaply user for that, can actually click through your repository and see all the data that you are open to share. All right, I'm going to stop here. These were my 10 minutes in the beginning. I know I took longer. Sorry for that.
Yeah, I was looking at my watch, you know.
I know.
So we're just going to start off the discussion with some questions that we had previously emailed to us. And then for the rest of the attendees, yeah, feel free to, if you do have a question, please just put that in the chat. So let's get started from Milan. Milan asks, now they say themselves, this is a lengthy question. That's not my, that's not me saying that, but here we go. So Milan asks, we see traceability across domains as the biggest challenge when mapping and measuring. For example, an insurance business discovers a pain point in waiting time after filing a claim, but the metric is internal processing time measured using a BPM software, not a journey map. There are many less obvious examples how to establish such links and enable traceability between customer and operations/organization metrics using repositories.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for that. I think it's a great question because it connects it shows one of the biggest issues corporates often have, which is how do I connect the outside perspective with the inside perspective? Like we might measure like the duration of a process, like we see here, but actually the pain point that results out of that is the customer focus and how can we connect that? And that was the reason why I showed you that you can also add live data to a journey map. I recommend that if you build a repository of your maps, that you add or that you define a standard set of lanes that you put in there. So one lane could be for projects, as I mentioned. Another lane could be for linked sub journeys or alternative journeys, alternative cases. One lane could be for customer pain points and one could be for employee pain points. And that is really important to connect those, to have those separated, but to have both there. So if you see in a step, there is an employee pain point, let's say there is an issue in support and customers complain that resolving that ticket just takes way too long. And you see an employee pain point, oh, connection to accounting, I just make this up, is a real issue because they don't prioritize what we see. You see an immediate connection there where you can drill deeper and say, okay, are these actually connected? Maybe we don't need, or maybe to solve the customer pain point, we actually need to solve an employee pain point. The same thing you can do for the KPI. So you can define per journey different KPIs. I recommend not to do too many, but I also recommend to do more than one. So NPS per journey is nice, but that should be just one. And if you watch this regularly, you know my opinion about NPS, but that's a different story. So have two or three or four KPIs per journey. And maybe even if you drill deeper per step. So you could then have a KPI for the internal duration, but also KPIs for what are the three most reported pain points in this area. The nice thing is if you have these maps up to date, you can actually connect them also to your CM software, to your support software. If your support team is good at tagging tickets, you might have an up-to-date view of what are the current issues on that day. And you can even connect that to certain steps in your journey.
Perfect, thank you. And this data lane we talked about, this can be live and linked to like Google Sheets, for example, and it can be updated live within the journey map. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, so we're gonna move on to the second question that we got beforehand from Peter. And Peter is asking, how do you find the best high-level journey? He works within a railway company and they have lots of different journeys from their customers, from buying tickets, subscriptions, physically going places, for a B2B deal, from mobility for corporates, disruptive journeys, for example, also at the station. So the main question from Peter here is, what is a good way to connect them all? But I feel like we might have already answered that.
Partly. But one thing I didn't show is you sometimes have really two distinct, completely distinct audiences or distinct products. So at the railway, I think you have a huge difference if you sell B2C or B2B. That might be completely different experience, completely different journeys. In that case, I would suggest to have those two journeys. Let's stick to the example. You have B2C and B2B as two distinct high-level journeys, where you then can drill deeper into each specific one. So it actually splits the funnel there. Journey map is by definition linear because our experience is linear. But that somehow also means that you define a sequence there where in reality the sequence might be different, might be another way. And as long as you're fine with that, as long as you're aware of that, that's totally fine. So the question is, what do you need to map? I don't recommend to map everything because you can, but focus on the areas where it makes sense to map, where you have pain points, and over time, your repository will grow. That's my answer there.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mark. So we've got one final question from the pre-selected questions, and this is from Margot. And they ask, I work for a government agency, and how could journey map repositories work for journey maps that cover journeys across all kinds of different government agencies that work independently?
Yeah. And at some point it gets tricky, obviously. Like the bigger the organization is, the more fragmented your services are, the more complex it is. And what one government did was they defined kind of the lifetime journey, like everything from you start your journey with like I was born to I go to school, I make my driving license, I whatever the big events are. And that is actually a nice way to also structure the different service offerings that you have from a customer perspective. So you can then build sub journeys for the different areas and then try to link it in. At some point it will not be perfect, and at some point it doesn't work anymore. Like I was working with a fast moving consumer good company. They have thousands of different products and with different journeys. Like how do you combine all of that? There is not the one journey to rule them all. It doesn't work anymore, obviously. But in a specific area, it works quite well.
Okay, perfect. We've got a couple questions in the chat now that we're going to move on to. So we've got one from Boris here. And he says, this all sounds fun and games on paper, but then again, yeah. So does many things, and we know how that could work out in practice. So
didn't want to name communism. That's what you wrote.
So some things on paper do sound perfect, but the reality is very different. So yeah, how do you operationalize this if you are, for example, a bank? Thanks very much for that question, Boris.
Yeah, awesome. It actually works quite fine. So I haven't done it with a bank. To be open, I started with that like 3 or 4 years ago. There's beside the repository, there's a whole governance approach around that, which I call Journey Map Ops. But that will be a different session. Not going to go into details there now. But the repository is the basis for this. Maybe what comes close to banks are insurances. We've done it there. And actually, we are working with one bank now who's starting to include that. Obviously, I need to talk a little bit about the governance structure behind that. And how you kick this off, how you start, depends highly on where you are right now. So if you have a service design team, a UX team that was using Journey Maps for a while. Some of our clients used Smaply for years. They have hundreds or thousands of Journey Maps in the software. So they have a huge mass there. And at some point they say, we actually are aware of this huge mass. How do we get structure into this? And that is a completely different starting point compared to someone who says, this is new to us. We want to start with this. We might have a handful of maps that we've done in workshops or projects, but actually we start with a blank canvas. So two completely different starting points. And obviously it's not black or white. There's a lot in between. I just going to mention it or explain it roughly for those big cases. Let's start with the blank canvas thing. It's new to you. I recommend start with a high level map. Define the high level map. And also that takes often a few iterations to really define it if you have like different customer segments that you might want to map and so on. Once you have that, look for pain points. So maybe connect it with your support or at least invite them. Look where you got loads of tickets. Look where you got complaints in social media. Try to get as much data together as you can and define which part of this high level journey do you have the most problems with? And that is probably the journey or the first sub journey you should map to dig more deeper into these problems and understand them. So blank canvas, start high level, define your problem, create sub journeys. Different starting point, you have loads of journeys, you have a mess. Look at what you have. Create an inventory of your maps. Try to use the three different use cases that I outlined in the beginning to understand what kind of maps do you have. In another Ask Mark, I also went through the six aspects to evaluate journey maps. So maybe loads of your maps are assumption-based. Leave them out. You really don't need them in your inventory. Focus on the ones that are valuable, that you can base decisions on, that are actually based on research. So for your inventory, it makes sense to distinguish between, is this based on assumptions? Is this based on research? Is this journey map a high level map? Is it a detailed level map? Which level is it? And what kind of map is it? Is it a customer journey? Is it a user journey? Is it an employee journey? So go through the six aspects, and out of these, try to identify the maps which are probably up to date, so maybe done in the last 1 or 2 years, which are focusing maybe on customers, if you want to focus on that, which are current state, and look at how many of this big mess are left. And out of these ones, then try to find a structure in them. Try to understand which level are they. Are they already connected? Can you connect them maybe? So it really helps out to do like a little card sorting exercise there, where you put them on a table, or maybe currently you do it on any whiteboarding software. You just put it up there and try to put them into relation into each other. If you then find that maybe you can connect 4 or 5 journeys through one higher level map, that is probably your starting point then. And then you rather go upstream to really start to connect them, and you're gonna have some blank spots, and that's fine. But once you have then your inventory and your repository out of that, then you can start adding live data to it, connect it to pain points and so on.
Great, thank you, Mark. I love your enthusiasm in this topic. It's really, really great. So we've got time for a couple more questions. Let's move on to one from Casper, who says they would be interested to hear something about the biggest barriers for implementing such a method in large organizations, and how do you overcome those barriers, for example, to get employees to continuously update these maps in a regular fashion?
Yeah. So again, it depends on where you are, right? If you have already a team who's working with journey maps, probably at some point they're intrinsically motivated to clean up the mess, because it will help a lot in their work. The big advantage is you can build on top of existing work, and that really helps you. If you don't, yes, it's a classic problem. Budget is how organizations express their love. If there's no budget for something, there's no love for it. And with budget in this context, budget is mainly time of employees to actually do it. I can guarantee you that it will fail if you put this on top of the daily workload of employees. And that will be a burden, and they will hate it, and it will not work. So what some of our clients did is they defined a new role. We called it journey map coordinator. And a coordinator is responsible for one particular journey, and only this one journey. And you have these coordinators all the way through the repository on different hierarchy levels. Often the highest ranking person in your organization responsible for customer experience are also is also the person for the high level journey map. So one of our clients even has the CXO, and they are that person is responsible obviously for a high level journey, because that's where all the data feeds in. But it always goes all the way down to very specialized teams, like the online check-in process, let's stick to the airline example, of a mobile phone. And that might be a small team responsible for that. And you need to pick one, or they need to pick one, who's responsible for updating the journey map. And they need budget for that. Budget means time. They need to have time to do this. Workload to really do this continuously. And with updating, I mean, and not so much updating the structure. You won't have big changes there every month. But that means checking in on projects that are going on in your organization. Because it's such a repository. If you then use all the governance around it, like Journey Map Ops helps you to identify overlaps between projects, contradictions between projects. Because most projects that impact customer experience do not come from design or innovation. They come from anywhere in the organization. And if you have someone responsible for this part of a journey, it is suddenly possible to find projects that impact this part of the journey, even if they come from legal, think about impact of GDPR, IT, or any other change of standard operating procedures. So workload to update that with the KPIs, pain points, and project is something between 1 and 3 days per month. That is kind of the budget, time budget you need to calculate in, and you need to have it. Otherwise, there's no love for it, and it will not work.
It's a must have then. Great, thank you. Thank you, Mark. So we've got a few more questions coming in. Another one from Max, who says, in today's situation, most companies have hundreds of journeys because every department has its own journey, kind of like silos. And how do you usually realign such journey mapping activities?
Yeah, it's a political thing, and I'm very honest. It doesn't flow like a breeze. There are some battles to fight, but what you will see is if you go through it, because let's say a classic organization, you have one particular journey. And that exists in different silos. Marketing has the same journey, sales has the same journey, design has the same journey. They all have different data to it because they need different data to make it relevant to them. And it's really hard to define ownership of this journey. And the problem is always, what I learned has to do with the language. As soon as you call it ownership of a journey, management of a journey, I'm not a fan of the phrase journey map manager because it's hard to manage it. That's why we call it coordinator, which is less invasive. It is the one who helps others to coordinate that. So it suddenly feels for teams, oh, they're taking workload off from me. And that is what you need to achieve. If you are able to achieve that, suddenly marketing, sales, design, what have you, might be more open to collaborate. And it only works if you guarantee them that there is information in the journey that is useful for them. Because very often teams say, that's a nice journey, but it's not relevant to it. What they actually mean is that journey map doesn't include relevant information to me. So what you need to do is add this information to the journey, and suddenly this journey becomes a boundary object, translating between marketing, sales, and design. If you then have these coordinators, at some point you're going to see a switch. In the beginning, people feel like, oh, they're taking something away from me. I pass on power. I lose power. Or it's additional workload for me because I need to feed information to these coordinators. At some point, you're going to feel a switch where the coordinators suddenly are seen as a hub in the organization, where people actively reach out to them and say, hey, we're starting a new project. I know you're coordinating this area. Did we have any projects? Is there anything else going on in this area? Because it helps them then to not start from scratch, but to build on top of existing knowledge. And that's really useful. So yes, even if there are some battles to fight, it's no matter how you name it, how you approach it. And at some point, you're really going to see that the role changes and is regarded very positively.
Okay, brilliant. Really, really interesting. Thank you. So we've got time for a couple more questions, hopefully. Really engaged attendance today, which is brilliant.
Awesome.
So we got one here from Joris regarding data security. So Joris asks, How do you cope with data security when linking real-time data that we talked about to a repository like this? Did you ever experience issues with this?
Yeah. So that obviously depends how your organization is structured. If you have a fragmented structure, like if you have, for example, your organization consists out of different sub-organizations, that is always when you enter legal issues there. Then the lawyers come in and takes time. It is possible, but again, it's more politics, it's more complex. It's much easier to set it up within your own organization, obviously, if it's one legal entity. And even there, be aware that if you add, for example, research data, you might have consent by the research participants only to use it within a specific time frame or context or whatever. And you need to be aware of that if you link it. In general, I think of data as a pyramid. You have on top like the key insights, like the summary of your research. Then you have your visualization. That could be like your project maps, journey maps, personas, system maps, and so on. And underneath, you have a whole bunch of raw data. And the legal question defines how much can you actually include in such a repository. In Smathly, it's quite simple. All the different projects have different user rights. So only a person who is allowed to see it can see it. Others can only see the name of the sub-journey, but not see what is within it, or see the name of the project, but not see what is within the project. And that's one way how to handle that. But you can then obviously state who is in charge of that, and they can reach out, and maybe you can then agree on a per project basis to access this kind of information. The more complex an organization is, the more difficult the legal side is of that. Absolutely. Mm. On the linking of live data, it depends. If it's your internal data, that's quite easy and straightforward to link. As soon as you link external data, obviously, again, you hit at some point legal boundaries.
Okay, perfect. So I think we're just going to have time for one more question, which is a two-part question. So a small concession there. But the first part, so this is from Jeff in Dublin. The first question, well, I'm going to ask you first is, could you please explain what you mean by a boundary object?
Yeah. I'm going to keep that quick. A boundary object translates is an object that translate between different disciplines. So a journey map, if someone from marketing takes a look at the journey map, someone from sales, someone from legal, they all take a look at the same object and they understand what they're talking about. And legal can add information to this map that then marketing and sales and design, IT also understand. So it is kind of a translating object. It's a boundary object, makes clear, it brings people on the same page, even though they have different backgrounds.
Okay, perfect. Thanks for clearing that up. So Jeff's second part of the question is, it seems that a repository of templates and taxonomy that can standardize journey mapping is a good place to start. Are Smathly clients doing this currently?
Yes, I mean, that's the main reason why companies use Smathly. If I look at our client base, the majority are large organizations using Smathly to standardize how they do journey mapping across their organizational silos, with the idea to standardize it and then actually use a repository to link them into each other. Absolutely. And we also have templates. And if you're interested more into journey map ops, we also offer like coaching in that and give you like the ideas for how you can set up a taxonomy and a standard layout of your maps and so on.
I know I said that was the final question. However, Margaret that did send a question previously, and it was such an interesting question, I feel like we should just clear this up for her. She asked, so that was the last question, Mark, regarding the governments. Which government did a journey map from life events that you spoke about earlier? Is it possible to share that information? I'm not sure if we'd be able to disclose that, but...
Yes and no. So there was, I recommend to look at a previous presentation from the Service Design Network Conference from the government of Dubai. They have a ministry called the Ministry of Happiness. It's a little bit lost in translation, but it's actually a ministry part of the Prime Minister office that is doing service design work. And they, for example, define such lifetime events. They use also cross-silo KPIs for different ministries and departments to bridge the silos. And they did a brilliant talk at one of the service design conferences on that. And they also publish a bit on the blog. That's the one we can disclose. But actually, inspired by that, I know of at least three different governments who initiated that. And we're working with a few of them, at least with two of them. But since they're a client, I can't talk about them. But have a look at the Ministry of Happiness in Dubai.
Perfect. That is all we have time for today, folks. So thanks very much for participating. And we are going to have a following session. And the next session will be about stakeholder maps. So you'll be able to participate in the next session just by signing up on our blog.morethanmetrics.com, or you can just drop us a line if you have any further questions as well. And yeah, we're really looking forward to that.
Awesome. Thanks a lot for being here. Looking forward to the next time. And thanks, Paul. You did an awesome job.
Thanks very much, Mark. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.